extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLM.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Kalen Carr, David Goss. Special shout out to my partner in eco-piracy, a true legend, the dread orca, White Gladys, a killer whale who has now surpassed Blackbeard and other illustrious swashbucklers in terms of sinking ships off the coast of Europe.
How's There's it going, a guys? Number on that?
No, but I assume. I mean, at this point, with the aggression of the orcas, they have quotas that must be met. And I'm following very, very closely in honor of our own orca expert, aficionado, and someday viewer, Kalen Carr. How's your weekend been? How's Memorial Day for you, Kalen?
It's been great, man. We got to hang it
together. Had a couple beers after Sunday's shows. Yeah. It's just wonderful.
Good
no
stuff.
Other logistical snafus for you.
The thing about New York is it's a city that never sleeps, so in theory you never have to go home.
Correct.
And go to sleep.
That's a good point. Have you guys seen my keys around here?
You don't find them?
No.
Have you found them?
No, I have no idea. I thought they might be in Weeby's suit.
Yeah, he, we don't have to.
Anyway,
part
it was
suit.
A complicated
yes.
time.
Congratulations, by the way, Weeby, that you and Kalen can wear the same suit.
Thank you. I thought in terms of coolness, because anything Kalen
on
wears
on every level.
Yeah, I told him when I pulled it on today for the previews that I immediately felt just.
You borrowed his suit on Sunday and you wore it again 2 days later.
Yeah, look, I know he's not dirty.
Yeah. No, I'm fine.
I need for dry cleaning.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
It's just
should
on
we?
Camera.
This is an Apple show now. Technically, you know, not even technically, explicitly.
We should get you some AirTags.
Should we get you an AirTag?
Oh, you should just AirTag my whole life.
You know who loves an AirTag? Yeah. Rich Hernandez. Everything's AirTagged, and so when you're with him, your phone is constantly like, "Warning, AirTag has been tracking you for 12 hours."
Yeah.
And you're like, "Rich,
well, I didn't know that happened."
Yeah, because
you want to prevent stalking.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Rich has it on his phone, wallet, not on his phone, sorry, wallet, keys, in a bag, in like two or three bags.
Rich is the producer for Instant Replay, by the way.
So whenever you tweet, legend. Why didn't you show this play, it's Rich's fault.
So I wore my suit back, snafu with the key situation, stayed in a hotel, walked around all of Manhattan the next day in a suit,
Wait,
in my suit, at least it wasn't Weeby's.
Yeah.
Mine, you know, I'm not going to compare, but it was
it's
my
a better suit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I was walking around with an MLS brief, like a little like folio that I have all my notes in. And
your whole life right now.
Yeah. And everybody was looking at me like, it's not a work day, obviously.
Yeah. Is that subway stops mumbling to himself?
Content always grinds.
My girlfriend came back in town and she was like, "You look like Borat."
You could have been like Tom Hanks in The Terminal.
It was
and
a
just
very
lived
nice
there until she came back.
Tough, guys.
On a very
match
warm
day, match day. What? I brought my bags. I'm going straight to DC. So this hotel life is, you know, I'm going.
You're living it, man. You're in deep. Let nobody tell you that anyone does more or sacrifices more for this beautiful game, this wonderful league, than Kalen Carr.
Oh, man. I need an AirTag.
What a...
Someone send me.
What
me
an
one.
Adventure that is. We hope you find your keys.
Thank you.
Melanie Drunen hit us up and said, "Extra Time is the best part about MLS." She was having a tough Memorial Day as well. Thank you for showing up the way you do, and please keep it up. "But where's my Monday Extra Time?" says Melanie. "I waited for you last night and eventually gave up. Out here just refreshing,
I
went
guess
to bed."
We could have put out a message.
We did, but I think it might have been late and or this morning. Yeah. I'd like to blame producer Anders for that, but
everyone knows you won't hand over
the
keys.
Probably it's
the
me.
Keys to the account.
She was waiting. She was refreshing.
That's tough.
Thought she'd be able to watch in the morning. We weren't there. What's going on? Of course, it was Memorial Day in the U.S. If you're international and you watch this show, welcome.
It was also a bank holiday. So if that's the thing that you also celebrate, you would have been
on
that as well.
Domino. Didn't know that was going to be the ad there.
God save the queen.
Yeah, all right. Best of Match Day 15 we'll get to in just a second, but we have more change with the U.S. men's national team. Anthony Hudson is departing. Adios. Arrivederci. Au revoir.
Barely.
Whatever they say in New Zealand. And in comes B.J. Callahan.
He's British, though.
Is he?
Yeah, he's from... No. He's from England. Mm. He coached in New Zealand.
Got it.
He's like a full-on...
Full Englishman.
Yeah. Okay. Come on, you know that.
I didn't know what the Queen's
We know his
was.
Life story. We went and he sat, he I learned know. Spanish, he walked around listening
I
to
I knew
podcasts.
More about his time in New Zealand and his time with in Argentina with the legend. Bielsa, than I knew
I just don't
want to
confuse
story.
Him with John Herdman, who's also
anyway,
a Britishman.
Anyway, congratulations to Anthony. It's been a very successful time for him as an assistant, as well as the interim coach.
Oh, you know.
No longer the interim BJ Callahan.
You know
Callahan.
What's funny, though? He was actually born in Seattle. I forget that. Anthony Hudson, because his dad was playing there, but he came up through West Ham's academy.
This is the new Peoria Carps. We're learning all the details here. BJ Callahan is the interim to the interim. He was also an assistant on this staff, but Anthony Hudson is gone, and Matt Crocker has not yet hired a new head coach, a permanent head coach. So BJ Callahan will take over for the Gold Cup as well as Nations League this summer. Any big thoughts? Having a hard time with this one.
I think the big reaction from people is a lot of frustration and annoyment that like someone they've never heard of is going to coach this team in two major tournaments this summer. A lot of this stems back from the chaos and the lack of institution building over the last 20 years. But I'll be lighter and say 5 years. I think the Federation is still catching up. And so I would be surprised if something like this happened again, where there's like no one in house to take charge when like Anthony Hudson was an interim manager. He wasn't going to get the full-time job. He got a job offer. He's going to leave. While I do think the summer will end up being wasted to an extent, which is really unfortunate, I don't think it's the end-all, be-all, and you're not going to change your hiring process.
Is it wasted?
I think...
I would challenge you and say it's not 100% wasted.
I didn't say 100%.
Okay.
Did I say 100%?
That's my challenge.
Yeah. Challenge accepted and agreed upon.
Okay.
But this is sort of how things work sometimes, which is like Gareth Southgate was a U21 manager. And like, these organizations, you don't have 100 coaches around because you don't coach that often. And someone leaves and the timing gets weird and, like, you become the manager. So I just think this is something that does happen. It's unfortunate. And now you're in a situation where the summer, I think, the value is getting players experience who have not experienced the national team and trying to keep the group, like, socially a positive place and make people feel like they want to be a part of the national team. So you can sort of keep guys coming back and whatever. There is a waste. The waste is you have an opportunity to play without having a must-win attitude, and therefore a coach could start to instill a style, and you will waste this summer in that time period. But that wasn't going to change if Anthony Hudson was the manager or someone else was.
I still think it is a must-win just based on expectations for the level of talent in this U.S. team and the stakes that are coming up in 2026. I mean, any loss that they have in a major competition, particularly in CONCACAF, is going to be looked at as a failure.
I think that's short-sighted.
I'm not saying that I completely agree with that. I'm just saying that that is the reality for this team.
Well, then
in
it makes
2026.
Then it saves a manager from having to deal with that.
That's fair. Now, you aren't going to have the tactical carryover. I completely agree with that. Like, we don't know who that next manager is. It's Jesse Marsh. It's whoever that is and what style they want to bring. Or it's
who's around that would just be able to temp in if it hadn't been BJ?
Temp in, I like that. Just hiring a temp.
You know, like
going to the agency and just hey, who's around?
Like, when Arena and Bob had no jobs, they could have been that person, right? Like, Dave Sarakin's sort of chilling. But, like, is there someone else out there that comes to mind who you'd be like, hey, would you want to coach the team for a month?
Not really.
Yeah.
No. Everybody who would be is sort of, you know, Jim Curtin has said, I want to be involved, but he's not going to walk away from the union.
Jeff
unless you gave
gonna,
him
like,
the full-time job. And then
but that's different.
Yeah, then maybe he
no,
would.
No, it would have to be someone who does not have a job. Oh, you could do a Tuca Ferretti thing with a Peter Vermes, where you're like, would you loan him to? That's what they did. That's what Mexico did for Tuca Ferretti. Twice he's been loaned to coach
that's
games.
That's objectively sick.
Yeah, well, it's Tuca, so he kind of does whatever he wants. So you could, like, ask SKC to do that.
No, I mean, this was the solution. It just doesn't get me going any kind of way. I get people that are frustrated and saying, hey, this is not right. Yeah, like, it's not ideal in any way to have the interim of the interim here, but he understands the culture, the players, the path that they were on. Like, continue the path. You had a guy like Florin Balogun decide he wants to be a part of this culture. We had a ton of dual nationals decide that this was a team and these were players that won, that they thought enough of personally, professionally, and on the field that they wanted to join that group. Like, just keep the good vibes going. I think with those good vibes, with the players that the U.S. has, the players, regardless of the outside stuff, should also expect to be challenging to / winning tournaments like this. And that's the mindset that you have to build as you push toward 2026.
What about a player coach?
Ooh. Now we're on to something.
Kalen hates this so
Tim,
much.
Yeah, Kalen's like,
the average age of this team is like 22 years old.
Tim Ream. Tell me Tim Ream can't come in there and man bun this team.
I think
to victory
Tim Ream might actually be
summer.
Injured right now. I don't think he's going to play.
Even better.
Yeah,
that's
fair. He could have just taken over. Are you allowed to without
I don't
a
know,
license?
Without the badges?
Yeah.
I mean, they got the guy in France who doesn't have his badges. They're just paying fines. Maybe that's the medicine U.S. soccer has to take. Tim Ream's our manager, and we're just going to pay
fines.
Seems
like a bad tactic, but yeah.
I don't know. This is the silliest
Chris Armas.
Situation right now.
Chris Armas doesn't have a job right now.
That's true.
He could tap national team. He's got a bunch of caps.
Either way, I'm not too. It doesn't seem like Kalen's.
U.S. U-20s are currently leading at halftime to go to the quarterfinals. If they win the U-20 World Cup, how much pressure does that take off the rest of the summer?
I mean, none. Until you win an Olympics, it's
nice.
It's all moot, right? Yeah. All right. Nice. All right, let's get to it. Best thing you saw on match day 15, Kalen. What do you got?
I'm going with the Tafari game-tying goal for FC Dallas against San Jose. They've thrown him up like late in games to, you know, add an extra kind of, you know, Hail Mary option or
like
an extra number in the box. And he took his chance very well.
Paint a picture for me. What kind of header was this?
I mean, just, you know, the little kiss header off the forehead.
A backflick?
Yeah.
Some people on the show have said that they also enjoy headers like that. And I've been laughed off the premise by David Goff.
No, you weren't laughed off because you enjoy headers like that. You were laughed off because when you try and describe a physical soccer moment, it becomes like an endless thing. You know, it's like a little bit of, but like header, but like not like a back one and then names a different play. And I was like, no, I understood. You could just say flick on header.
Got it.
That's all you had to say.
Cool.
All
right. Cool.
Flick on header. Beautiful flick on header.
Was.
And yeah, important one.
Did you have any defenders in your career who are always trying to tell the coach that they should be playing up top, like practice games, always shooting from places they shouldn't in 7v7,
yeah,
begging to be up there? And who were they?
Wilmon Conde. And
oh, that's, yeah. He might have been able to, though.
I mean, he actually would just play striker in training. It was not a good time for Chicago, honestly. Wilmon was like best 11 defender at the time.
Yes, he was a monster.
And trained every week as a striker. I'm not even kidding. Like, in actual sessions, I'd be like, hey, man, you're like our, like the league's best, actually.
Yeah.
Voted upon. You should go back.
He's like, yeah, that's the point. I don't need to practice. Like,
yeah.
He I'm was good. Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to hit back.
Well, he's not good. He's like Daniel Day-Lewis. He's a method actor.
Yeah.
So he plays as a center forward so that he knows
better understand
what you want to defend.
What kind of center forward was he?
I mean, not very good, actually. He's great in the back. He could dribble, like carry the ball out, left foot, big size. Like, he was great. As far as like this technique, as far as the flick on header, Bobby Boswell, very skilled in the air. Wasn't always the lift, didn't have the same lift off me. No offense to Bobby.
Yeah.
Didn't quite have that same hops, but as far as flicking it on and finding, I think I even scored a goal or two off of a Bobby come to the near post and find it to the, you just start immediately looping to the far post because he was always good and could, if he wasn't going to put it in himself, he'd put it close to it.
Wherever that big dome is going.
It is one of those things.
It does have a dome.
Everyone played as like a 10 or a center forward when they were young because everyone who plays professional soccer is really good at soccer. And it's like every kid was shortstop or point guard, but they always put it in notes when you broadcast stuff, especially like college soccer where the person's kind of like, I don't really know soccer. So I'll just put like all conference in high school. And you're like, I'd hope so. They're playing like high D1 soccer. I hope they were all conference. And it's always like, was a center forward. And then they're like, every time they score on a set piece, you have to be like, they have those attacking instincts because they actually grew up as a center forward.
I would listen to a show just with a series of interviews. Like, when were you switched to a post-super draft? When were you switched from winger to fullback?
Sometimes they hadn't yet.
When did you become a center back?
Sometimes they get drafted and they say, yesterday.
Well, that's life, man. I don't think Noel Buck's going to be moving out of central midfield anytime soon. It's your best thing in match day 15, huh?
What a great lead-in. Noel Buck scored an epic goal. It was awesome to watch, and he's a young player, and so I like all domestic young players or non who are fighting their way through for more minutes. Stepped up in a big moment, though. This was kind of like they got hit against the run of play to go down 2-0. Carlos Gil. Yeah. at home against Chicago. Carlos Hill not on the field. And I think there was, in the moment, I think there was a vibe of like, this one got away. And then this is a moment of brilliance where he just like smacks one from 30 out. And immediately the Revs from there on outplayed Chicago, were, you know, ready to like playing downhill, attacking, aggressive. So that's a big moment for a young player. And I think we're seeing him push a little more into the attack without Hill on the field because you just need more from everyone. And it was cool.
He had one taken back as well recently for a questionable offside interfering with the goalkeeper. So it's nice to see Nolbach get that one and nail it down. Just 18 years old, one of the best young players in this league. Like, if you listen to the show and you love the league and enough to listen to 360 minutes of podcasting a week, God bless you. I love you. You're my people. And you don't know Nolbach, do some research. Watch the Revs. And when you do, check out Nolbach. You had another one here. Speaking of flick on headers.
Yeah. I had at some point said Tristan Blackman's own goal. The thing about Tristan Blackman's own goal is, like, no part of it feels like a standard own goal you've ever seen. And Tristan Blackman actually doesn't look stressed until it goes through the net. It's not like he's caught out where he's like, right, I got to throw a body
part. It's a long ball back, and he's probably 40 yards from goal.
And he's moving pretty well under it. And the situation, I'm pretty sure Stroud gave up on the ball. So
yeah,
if he lets, and then Hassall comes wide. That's Hassall's mistake. Like, he's supposed to stay in the box, but nothing about what Blackman heads back is purposeful. Where it's like, oh, if you had been where I thought you'd be, I would have bullet
header, very normal header back to the goalkeeper on a non-threatening ball, 40 yards from goal.
But it's such an odd body moment for Blackman, and it made me chuckle when I saw it. And it is. I think someone texted me, like, St. Louis finding new creative ways to get teams to give them
goals. I didn't even make that connection.
But that's on Sartini, though, in my opinion. I think because, you know, it is a relationship where the mistake comes from. And I think that's Hassall's first match this week.
Yes,
yeah,
first match of the year.
Yeah, so Takaoka has been very good, and, like, you've built that continuity and understanding and that rhythm, and it's difficult to step in, especially against a team like St. Louis.
In St. Louis.
In St. Louis, like, crazy atmosphere, just bringing a goalkeeper out of rhythm. This is not like talking about his ability even. It's because the mistakes are mostly decisions, right?
And some of that. The first one, he's rushing out on the free kick, which is just an easy catch. Just really just an easy catch.
He reads it wrong. And then that one, and then the last one's a rebound. The confidence starts to go. So, you know, for me, it's Sartini making that rotation. I understand rotations are a part of, I'm sure we'll talk about all the teams, but to make that type of rotation when you know that you're going to be under pressure, you just saw St. Louis put four up the week before, and now it's like, okay, this is kind of what you expect. Now, I know he came out and was very critical of the referees, but for me, I felt like the responsibility should have fallen on him in that situation to say, Not to throw down his players, but really put his players in a tough position. And I felt like that the continuity, the way those goals were conceded, yes, again, we keep going back to the way their goals are conceded against St. Louis. It happens. Credit to them for applying pressure. Even the Leuven, like, long service is still really dangerous service. But I felt like that that decision to make that rotation then was very costly and felt like that was the focus. And I don't know if he was trying to, like, spread it around. I haven't seen instant replay yet.
No. Yeah. There's some, he was very, very angry at the referees. And I do think that former Whitecap who he coached, Jake Nowinski, should have been sent off for a second yellow. But the flip side is they were down 2-0 at that point. And he took a chance here. Like, they have had a ton of balls to juggle this year. CONCACAF Champions League, in addition to MLS, and now Canadian Championship, and they're into the final of that one. So, and they started so badly last year, so there was a ton of pressure on them to start well in the league this year as well. It sounded like he just said, I'm going to, you know, Kubas rested as well. Brian White wasn't in the starting lineup. And Takeoka as well, who's basically played every match since he arrived, he was giving guys a breather. But the question was, if you give him a breather in St. Louis, shouldn't you play a little bit more conservatively knowing what gets St. Louis going? So
more conservative than letting someone hit a useless 45-yard ball to the, like, that's not true. A moment. But let's go back. I think you said this before we started the show, which we have not 100% confirmed, but our understanding is that you need to have three Canadian players start for the Canadian Championship. They are coming up on the final. Ali Ahmed, who thankfully is doing much better.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Dangerously knocked out of the game last week, had to immediately go to the hospital.
Pacific. Yeah, we have more on that in the mailbag.
We do?
It's the new, the entire Vancouver Islands area is the new Peoria.
But I was right, I think, about most
of it. We'll see.
More right than Doyle. You should call Doyle up and so that he can deal with this. So our understanding is if Ahmed's not available on this team, you have Ryan Raposo, you have Russell Tybert, if healthy. Those are two Canadians who play. If Ahmed's unavailable, it becomes Hassal or Karifa Yao if you're not going to pull a homegrown kid who's only really played with Whitecaps 2 or is out on loan already. So it kind of is like if you're going to get Hassal his first game and he has to start the championship, you'd rather it be in St. Louis where you probably don't expect to get points than in another setting, right?
Yeah, two home games coming up. And for the three in a row, actually, for the Whitecaps, Houston, SKC, Cincinnati, they are struggling on the road, which is sort of their...
Cincinnati's after the final, though.
Yeah, their birthright. But they need wins at home in the league. And so I understand why Sartini made the rotations he did. It just didn't. Just didn't work out.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. Bob Bradley made a big rotation.
Congrats to Miggy Perez, by the way.
Yes. No, that was awesome.
Do goalkeepers need to be rotated?
Nice.
That's a fair question.
But wait, time out.
It's maybe mental load.
No,
they want him fresh for a
if he
stretch
has
run.
To start Hassal, because he
in the
has
final.
To start a third Canadian, it's either Hassal or Karifa Yao. So there's two options. So if he has to start him, it's not a rotation like, oh, my God, there's too many miles on your
How leg. Does Vancouver not struggle
I
to find
no
Canadians?
Idea. That is
another. That is a more foundational question.
Okay.
They could try and loan Alphonso Davies in just for the game. Bayern Munich season is over. They won the title.
Not a bad option.
They got a little loan to buy with Real Madrid, maybe. Just be the way station on the way to Madrid. Anyway, Toronto FC staying in Canada here. We recorded, and we've been talking about the Reds for a couple weeks now, and Caitlin Kyle sort of primed the reporting pump, it seemed like, though I'm sure that was going on at the Athletic far before we were talking about it as well, because it was just sort of open knowledge that things were bad in the background. But Caitlin Kyle said, hey, Lorenzo Insigne is not happy here, and then Federico Bernardeschi obviously came out and said, maybe we need to change something, and The Athletic posted a very, very detailed story with many anonymous sources and others not anonymous about everything going on in the background of Toronto FC. And, hint, it wasn't great. Bob heard that maybe we need to change something and had a talk with Berna and then said, well, I think we're going to change you. You're going to be on the bench, coach's decision. If you didn't read the piece, Tom Bogert, Paul Tenorio, I think Pablo Maurer involved in that one, Joshua Cloquet as well. I will sum it up as Charlie Bohm did, who, by the way, we'll talk to you later about the CONCACAF Champions League final. Somehow we got through however many minutes of this without talking about Wednesday night's big game, which is really just dropping the ball on my part. I chose Orcas over CCL, and I'll never live that down. Here's how Charlie described it. Quote, locker room distrust, mutinous conference calls, vapes on a plane. If you didn't read this, apparently Federico Bernardeschi was vaping all over the training ground and the plane, which I just don't care about at all. It's just a detail that I don't think matters in terms of his performance, but there we go. And resentment between the two DPs and Insigne and Bernardeschi. And it all came out in the open, and it went crazy, and then DC came to town, and they won 2-1. And I thought it was super fitting, Dave, that DeAndre Kerr and Kosi Thompson scored the goals, and Insigne assisted them. It was his best game of the season by far. But for two guys out of the Toronto Academy in this time of turmoil and question marks about the state of the club, those guys score. Insigne looks like he's bought back in. He's fist pumping, high-fiving Bob afterwards and everything else. And then says after the game, I didn't expect MLS to be as difficult as it is. Check mark on the bingo board for that one. And then my best moment of match day 15, took a while to get here, is Bob chasing Bernardeschi down the tunnel to try to dap him up. Because obviously he was in the building, but didn't play.
Was he chasing him?
Yeah.
I think he was just walking.
I think you're characterizing him.
Okay,
your
fine.
Own.
I'll take the chasing back.
Bernardeschi is headed down the tunnel, and Bob is making an effort to get there.
There's an intent by Bob to go try to pull Bernardeschi into the sort of like, hey, to include him a little bit, which is, I guess, the way that I read it.
So in your mind, the defender has made an intentional play at the ball.
Yes.
And the attacker is going the other way.
Right.
Okay.
I think they were just walking. He was walking. The other dude was walking.
They were just in the same zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's like
total marking. Whoever comes in here, I'm dapping up.
Bernardeschi seemed to respond to it. I think he as you see them go into the tunnel, he turns and gives him.
He touched him. He's a person. I can't believe this.
Are we? Are we overdoing? Are we Bobby Warshawing this, and that we're getting into the just all body language signs and perhaps.
Kaylin, you wouldn't last a day in NBA coverage. You would get burned out. Does Jason Tatum hate Jaylen Brown? I don't know. Here's a slow clip of a referee looking the other way when a shot gets taken. You wouldn't survive a day in that ecosystem.
I mean, the article was, first of all, the fact that all that information got out to me was said a lot about how bad things are there. Because that's the type of stuff, especially when you're like, was it a apricot flavored vape? Like what was the like that? All the like kind of petty stuff feels like you're trying to.
You're pointing fingers. There was a little bit. There was a little Spider-Man like everybody pointing each other thing.
Yeah, I was almost. I was like dizzy reading the thing because I'm trying to figure out like, okay, well, is this guy to blame? That's messed up. Like why is this way? Who hates who? Who doesn't hate who? Do like then people started breaking down body language of, you know. Bernardeschi and Insigne like celebrating a goal in Italy national team, and I was like, man, this is gone. Like people have lost it. It doesn't sound good, but I, you know, the one part I was sure about was the fact that all that got out was indicative of how bad things had gotten. Because, I mean, I think most people would be shocked to figure out how bad things can get in a locker room and how much just chaos kind of exists. You don't have to like each other necessarily to get points in MLS. That's the you know, I'm not trying to like break anybody's
feel good.
Yeah, I'm not trying to kill the
vibe.
Everybody
has baggage and it's a competitive environment.
Yeah.
People want opportunity.
People from all different walks of life, not the same opinions necessarily.
Some with Drake track jacket collabs, some without.
Going back to sit down with Andrew Wiebe for 10 minutes in a hotel ballroom.
I think it was you. I thought you didn't see you.
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't see you. Yeah, that was. By the way, that was part of it. Is I didn't see. Like Bernardeschi was jealous of Insigne for being in San Jose for the
media marketing
sit downs, and I was like, Lorenzo Insigne did not want to be there. Yeah. So you both were frustrated.
I was there. It was okay.
Did better with you.
It was okay. I mean, it's just I don't know that
San
part,
Jose in late winter. It's like
I could see maybe like the money part feeling a little bit hurt.
Yeah, that would be tight.
Someone where you're like, I'm scoring goals. This guy, I could see like those types of ego things coming along.
So
with that.
Can I just throw out the part you said, which is I'm scoring goals, which I think a week and a half ago, I think all of us. Well, I don't know. I would have said the only thing that has worked in the last 2 years is the signing of Bernardeschi. Insigne has been a zero as a player. Marc-Anthony K trade has not worked out. The Hedges signing so far has not worked out. Sean John, there's only so much he can do. Rosted has not worked out. The pieces they've chosen to trade away, Jacob Schaffelberg, has not worked out. The only thing that it seemed like made sense was that Bernardeschi was really good and fairly consistent. It's interesting that over the last week and a half, it has turned now to like Insigne is captain. He's bought in. They don't get along. No one likes the flavor, the color, whatever.
By the way, I just thought
Bernardeschi has got
anyone under 18. Don't do that.
Yeah.
And if you are doing it, look into the health negatives.
Yeah.
There. Just throwing it up.
So. That actually has been a surprising.
Just call me dad.
That has been a surprising twist to me of this whole thing. Genuinely.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Which part? That it's just none of the things have worked?
No, that Bernardeschi seems, it all feels like it has fallen on him. That he's the one who's getting left out of the 18, one healthy this week. But a week ago, Insigne and Bob didn't want to talk to each other. Now Insigne is captain.
Yeah, but he went out and stood in front of the media and like, basically said the manager should be moved.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's age old. You always kill the messenger.
I mean, if I'm in MLS right now.
Well, no, it's not
Bob has to send a message.
Yeah, you it's can't do
team.
That.
Yeah,
so they talk about it in the locker room. He sets them aside. And I thought the way the team responded was super positive. Like, Wayne Rooney on the other side said he wanted to sub off all 11 players at halftime.
They did three before half even ended, like right at the end.
So I think that showed in a way that, you know, this Toronto team came out to play in this one and did seem extra motivated and did get the leadership from Insigne and did get the role players to, you know, get on the end of things. And, you know, they were on top of it. And I think, if anything, that does apply some pressure now to Bernadeschi to come back into the team and prove that he can mesh into this and not be a problem.
How much allocation money would it take for the LA Galaxy to trade for Frederico Bernadeschi?
You're blowing my mind right now. Because
that's good Weeby content right there.
Yes, that is right in my fan fiction zone.
If I'm Chris Henderson, by the way, because he got Pozuelo last year because TFC had to
try to pick up that distressed asset.
If Messi doesn't work out, that would be my pivot. Hey, we'll take Bernadeschi this time.
Very interesting.
Yeah. One thing I do think is indicative of generally how bad things are in a place is when you move players on and they find success elsewhere.
Right.
And because I think about like Schaffelberg, I think about McNaughton, some of these guys that have gone other places and found success. Sometimes that can show just like, you know, how bad things are in one place, and those, you know, players move on to a better situation and find more success. So if I were the Galaxy, I would never do that trade. And not just because Bernadeschi isn't a quality player, but just because, well, one, they do need wingers, so that's compelling, but I feel like after all of the turmoil and mess that they're going through on their own, adding that type of player with that personality to the mix.
Do they have a DP spot open?
No, they'd have to.
Well, Douglas Costa may help them out with that.
Yes, that may be a thing.
We'll get to that in a little bit.
That would be scary. Maybe good for content.
Yeah.
He showed up to Toronto in a white suit, no shirt.
Mm-hmm.
That is a city north of the border. Imagine what he shows up to his LA Galaxy introductory press conference in.
People.
The dude was born for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very curious to see now what happens and how Bob handles all of this, because Bob's no stranger to big egos, to big players, to complicated situations. He understands probably just as much as any manager that, like you said, 3 points and winning changes a lot of things. It shifts the political capital within a club. Like, you got to be on the winning side.
Yeah,
that's anywhere.
Like, and as much as I was saying, the fact that it got out is bad, in a way it might actually be a little bit of a relief.
Yeah, it's a valve.
Yeah.
You let the valve go, because it was all bubbling. And you could, honestly, on 360, I don't know if you saw the Matt Hedges interview, but they were asking him, like, so what now? Do you guys all go have, like, a drink together? And he's like, no, probably not. No,
no.
No, but look, we all went
Mark
out and
Anthony
competed
Kay
tonight.
Post, like, this doesn't fix everything.
Yeah, that's why I don't
better.
Read into the, like, you know, did he pat him on the back? Did he not pat him on the back? It's like, he benched him. He said put him on the bench,
right?
But the points do matter. The points do help. And they can, even if it's just a Band-Aid, you can build off that. Like, you stop the bleeding, number one. You get points at home. They're still on the table, not in a terrible position. You know, the only thing I would say is for this team, they don't have a midweek game, right? I think they play at home next weekend.
Yeah, it's no, they do. It's Chicago Fire midweek at home.
So they do.
Turn right around.
That's better.
And then it's at Minnesota on the weekend. Then they're home against Nashville.
Okay.
Cincinnati,
for this team,
at New England. It's not no schedule is easy in MLS, and it's all unpredictable, but.
But I look across a lot of teams, and when they're struggling right now, it's like playing back-to-back is actually not good because they're just in a bad way. I feel that way for the Galaxy, where it's just like they're in a bad way, vibes are tough, travel, add on to it. But I feel like if you can catch a good one and maybe you can make a little bit of a run at it, maybe this will work for Toronto to – and time together in training is not really at a premium for this group.
One thing to throw out is Kosi Thompson came off the bench and scored because Brandon Cervagna limped off in the 21st minute. So, 24th. So even on a good game, they already don't have Osorio. They already don't have Bradley. Kay has struggled with injuries. They still lose like a minute stop. Like that, Cervagna was brought in for the purpose of this dude can play with any of the other three, and he's going to play 10,000 minutes this season while we manage the other ones through it. So to lose a guy like that, it just sort of goes back to, and I've talked about this with Inter Miami, every time it feels like they find a little solution, that goes away. And so it's like, well, what are you really going to lean on? And I don't know if the results don't come right now, what happens? Because you're heading into a transfer window, into the summer, right? And like, you're TFC, if you are outside the playoffs, which means you are a bottom 12, 14, 15 team in the East, after this came out, and while there's relief some of it came out, I've heard relief that not more came out. So
sure.
We may not be done, or at least the feelings may not be gone, or the issues may not be gone.
The egos aren't gone.
It could all turn in the other direction very quickly.
I'm very curious to see what happens and what the decision-making is from the top down, because truly the project was, and the project was to go win another cup and to be at the top of the league, and the spin proved it. The project was Bob and the Italians and these veterans.
Yep.
It's not like a project that has super
there's no
long-term
to
vision
no.
to it. It is an immediate win-now strategy for an organization that spent a lot of money to invest in that strategy.
Come on, Cave Cowell.
Well, that's...
G20s, baby.
The one thing that the only
other
thing.
Dave, by the way, if you're just listening, Dave again, watching again, yeah, while the podcast. Yeah, he's that good, folks. He's that good.
The only other thing that stood out to me from the article was it made it more clear. He's talking. I think I seemed like they were upset about or Bernadeschi at least was upset about the training tactic. It was less about the tactics than maybe the training methods.
Schedule.
Yeah. And that was the part that always confused me when he said, we don't have tactics or we don't have a plan, because we know Bob Bradley is right. going to have a plan. That's like what he does. So I just didn't quite understand that part. But then when I read the article, it made it a little bit more clear, or it at least hinted that I didn't like, you know, maybe in Italy, it's a lot more like kind of a tactical session where this was more competitive. Like we need to be, get up and down. Like we're developing players. We have a lot of different tasks than just like rolling out our best 11. Doing a little tactical
right. like
work.
Like you guys are all like, technically and tactically at XYZ
yeah,
level.
Yeah, we
so
have
we
11 Bernadeschis
yeah.
at, you know, these top clubs, and we're going to move them around and move the pieces. And, you know, you go out and you play every 3 days, or you play every, you know, a yeah. couple times a week. And this is different in MLS. Like you train, you have to compete, you have to keep that level. Like a lot of it comes down to that. And so you can't just train the way that maybe these guys are accustomed to. And that's where some of the disconnect happened. And that can really upset people. Like I've played with guys who've come from other places that have different training tactics. I've had managers who came in the other way and like had more of a, hey, we're going to have a 2-hour session that is no competing and
right.
it's all tactics. And you're just like, what is this? Like, we're ready to play 7-a-side to goals. Like, let's run them out and actually want to compete. And so I think some of it, that adjustment is kind of what maybe what they were struggling with.
Cal heard you.
At
this time. Let's go, Cade.
Cal heard you. You know,
wait, can yeah, I just – yeah, so one historically, one of the successes that we heard coming out of LAFC was how quickly they clicked. And we had heard from a few people who were in the team that almost the entire preseason, Bob played 8v8 in his system, and it was an hour of playing, and that's how he coached. And he has made comments about periodization and like sort of the obsession that has come around over the last 15 years in periodization of having a plan overarching and everything slowly builds towards it, where I think Bob does believe in like the game is the lesson and I can build out my ideas through the game. So it does click a little just from what we know. Now at LAFC, it was a massive success, which was like, I think Carlos Vela likes playing soccer. I don't think Carlos Vela loves sitting around watching a tactical session for 2 hours. So I think it fit with that group, and it worked really well, and he had a ton of success.
Also a group that's coming into a brand new environment that they all feel sort of an ownership of building from the jump, whereas Toronto FC is a lot of sort of, it is truly parts from different places coming in, whether it's, you know, the old guard at Toronto and Osorio and Bradley and you know, that sort of group, or guys that brought in via trade, or the Italians. They're just like, there's a lot of parties to sort through, and that's what made that Athletic article so interesting and thinking and talking about this so fascinating. So, midweek.
Was this the Insigne quote? I see it in the rundown where he said he didn't expect MLS to be as difficult.
Yeah, that's why I was like, check that box off. Like, when you come to MLS as a DP and you struggle a little bit, you got to take that club out of the bag. Like, guys, it's way harder. It's so much harder, which I obviously think, but you're just waiting for that quote. Okay, I guess we're starting with a lot of consternation here. Galaxy over the weekend at home against Charlotte FC. They're coming off of a controversial, polarizing win against LAFC and behavior therein by Ricky Pouge and others, which I was delighted by, but Giorgio Chiellini obviously wasn't. After the game, and we can get into that, there's a video out of, I believe it's Angel City Brigade.
Why are you talking about that game? They played Charlotte.
That's what I'm saying.
You said LA.
Yeah, I'm saying they're coming off that game and then played Charlotte at home and lost 1-0 to Charlotte. Yeah, I didn't. My bad. Anyway, the supporters are screaming at Greg Vanney and the players, basically saying, it's got to be better. This is not good enough. They just took the L at home. Chicharito got two yellow cards and is now suspended. Their schedule coming up is just brutal. Obviously, they have an Open Cup game at RSL, but they're also at RSL in the league. They're at St. Louis, Sporting Kansas City at home. KC looks like they're turning a corner. At Colorado, at San Jose, LAFC at home, Philly at home, at Vancouver. Like, that is a brutal eight-game stretch
in the
league.
All MLS teams.
Yeah, but it's
wild.
Thanks. Thank you. But they're at the bottom of the table, Dave.
Yes, they are.
Where did the Galaxy go from here, and what did you think about the scene that we saw? Will Kuntz, the new executive, also coming over to like, I don't know if it's engage with the fans, but listen to the fans.
So let me just throw out, because you said like that a lot of consternation off the top, I think for other fans, they're like, oh, we want to hear the positives about our team, which I agree with. This Galaxy start, I believe, is the worst start in the club's history. So we're not just talking about like, oh, these teams are doing bad, let's talk about them. This is historic. And therefore, it is such a big story because it continues. And we've made the joke a couple of times of, if you have a thought in MLS and it's wrong, wait 5 weeks. Well, we've been through cycles now, and the Galaxy have not righted themselves. And that's where you reach a level of fear. You add in the fact that they have a club ban from bringing players in from outside, and the fix has to come from inside the group if it's going to happen. And nothing has changed, really. Personnel has not really changed. Ideas have not really changed. So you're looking at, I think, a fan base who's saying it's been terrible. We don't really have the mechanisms to change. And there is not what feels like a ton of internal look and say, well, what can we do differently? So I get that frustration. I think it's a really unfortunate scene of like, you're coming over to applaud your fans to thank them for coming out and supporting you, and their response is to scream at you and be like, you guys.
Yeah, well, honestly, terrible. Though, which is the continuation of an ongoing conversation between the fans and the club for, I mean, months and months and months, mm-hmm. if not years, probably at this point, of like frustration of where the Galaxy are and what they claim to be and how their current state and the results they're in match up against that. You know, you got guys coming down the locker or coming down the hallway and the. Out to the field with five MLS Cups in the cabinet. And, like, I've always seen that display by the Galaxy and thought to myself, that's a flex. Like, they're trying to, as you enter their building and their field, tell you who they are and intimidate you a little bit. Like, we're the Galaxy. And for a long time, that really meant a lot. It's just lacking a little substance right now.
Yeah. Well, Chicharito's, you know, I think this was weeks ago now, said the fans are right. You know, so he said the fans are right. So I don't take any issue at all with the supporters being upset no. with the front office or the fact that they can't make signings. And, you know, they're totally entitled to do that. I don't think they're entitled to a conversation on the pitch after a match over, like, what's going on with the team. Like, the players are coming over and, you know, if you play at Dignity Health – you know, you have to walk by them to leave the pitch. So it's not really like they went out of their way to the other side. Like, that's the way the stadium is set up. So some of that is kind of inevitable, where you're just going to walk by them. And from an opposing player standpoint, you have to walk by them as well too, which is, I think, intentional as you have to walk by the supporters as well on the other side. But I think also, yeah, like getting into a conversation with the fans over why or what happened right after a match, like I do not think that that's productive, and I would just completely stay out of that. I think you want to show respect from the player side, you want to show respect to them, but as far as like getting into a back and forth over what's wrong or what's broken or how are we going to fix this, like I that seems like I would stay out of that.
So in reading. Body language, TFC style. I thought it was good, though, that Will Kuntz came in to the situation as sort of like a third party and got Greg Vanney out of it and talked to the fans as well. And I believe he was on Corner of the Galaxy this week, not after that. I assume it happened.
Either way, it's a must listen.
Yeah.
Or at least, anybody who cares about the Galaxy.
Yeah, and Josh does as good a job as anyone covering the Galaxy. But, like, that is the one sort of little silver lining right now for people is, like, Will Kuntz has a history of being part of a good LAFC club. The hope is he can save things. And so I think to have him come into the situation and him sort of recognize of like, I can help here in person, but then also you're hoping big picture behind the scenes. That's sort of what the Galaxy are hoping for, but nothing about what I saw on the field changes. And their XG has been better than what they've scored. Chicharito suspended. How does that get better? But, Tyler Boyd hitting bike kicks near the goal. That's going to affect your numbers and game states of, like, they're chasing. But for Charlotte, when they pull the Galaxy apart on their goal, it is like classic. Everyone is head down chasing, and there's no structure defensively. And I think that's been the story now for a few years.
If Tyler Boyd plays that ball across the ground to Chicharito, though, he's going to score that.
He almost scored it as is. And this is a cross, no pressure. Chicharito doing his, like, a little bit of a Forrest Gump run. He's like the big arm pumper.
The high step.
Yeah. And then at the back post, it's like, you know, it's above his waist and he's throwing his leg out. He still almost scores it. If it's on the ground.
Ah, that's a goal.
He's selly. Yeah. Easy celebration.
But Raheem Edwards had one like that he could have laid over to a runner 2v1 on the goalkeeper a few weeks ago. But again, with the 5-week thing, that happened. Now it happens again. Like, I don't know when that changes because everyone's the same and it keeps on happening.
No Chicharito. The frustration at the end, just the yellow card.
Could have been orange.
First yellow was kicking the ball away in the 50th
minute. Yeah, and that's another frustration thing.
Just an unnecessary moment. He was just, and when he gets it, he doesn't react as in, like, he knows he's frustrated, he knows he did it, and he knows it was dumb.
Well, this is, it comes to a whole other thing where I don't feel your number 9 should be your captain. And it's partly because
can't
of this.
Trust
it's like, well, no, it's not because of that. It's more just because, like, you're looking for somebody in a moment to, like, grab the team and be like, hey, we need to get stuck in. We need to show some effort. But
to prioritize the collective maybe more over sometimes the individual?
Sure, that too. Like, I want my striker to be selfish. You know, the best strikers I played with were selfish, wanting to score the goals themselves and not, like, sacrificing always for the team. And, you know, those types of plays where it's like, I'm going to get stuck in. And it's like, well, rather that be like a holding midfielder or a center back. And I'd like it to be, you know, not on a defender, but maybe, you know, the number 10 from the other team. Like, having a little bit more of that bite is something the Galaxy have needed. But the way it's expressed and who it's expressed through right now is like coming from Chicharito's, in a lot of ways, the emotional leader of the team. And that's natural. And I think he can serve that role well. But as far as being like, he's got to be the goal scorer. He's supposed to be the hard. He feels like he needs to be the hard man. Like, it's just all
the emotional heart and soul too. The guy that answers when it's time to answer in front of the press.
Yeah. He's wearing a lot of different hats, and
you know, they have some
it's not helping him.
Other VPs, it'd be nice to get some help from that. Ricky Pooge, I think, put a target on his back with the whole celebration against LAFC of just like, cool, like, you know, you thought you could be in the MVP and you showed that form last year, but we haven't seen it this year. And as you said, Dave, this is the group. The summer does not bring instant solutions, so they got to find a way internally to figure it out. Douglas Costa, I mentioned we'd hit this, and I'm just going to read Kevin Baxter's tweet, verbatim Kevin Baxter at the LA Times, who covered this team for a long time and is also on Corner of the Galaxy. Quote, media reports in Brazil say an arrest warrant has been issued for LA Galaxy DP Douglas Costa for non-payment of alimony. Costa, who is guaranteed $4.5 million this season, is the 7th best-paid player in MLS, but has more red cards than goals or assists. This year. That's tough. That's tough. All right, let's go positive. Shift it. Nashville. Carlos Whitaker says, let's hear about Nashville and their 7-game unbeaten run without Walker Zimmerman, Leal, or a legit number 9. We've struggled scoring goals the first 3 seasons, but that seems to be turning. Could a DP9 signing this summer launch us into a legit Shield and Cup contenders in your eyes? Carlos, eyeing the double. And 3-1 win against the Crew on Sunday to round out match day 15. Hani Mukhtar put on a scissor clinic to seal this one. What is their state right now, Dave, in contender status?
Anders, run the clip. I don't think we have a clip.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
no clip. All right. What did the clip say?
Well, it was wrong, yeah. Too, because Maria was the one in our ear. So shout out to Maria, who loved our Tuca Ferretti mention earlier in the show. The point of the clip was, I think I was asked 2 months ago when they couldn't score, but were still hanging into tight results of like, how worried are they? And they're not. This is their identity. This is their DNA. So they are comfortable in 1-0 games. They're comfortable in low scoring moments. They need Hani to be elite. But I think a lot of what our conversation has been is like, so when he breaks down, what's going to happen? Why would we assume that? He's in the prime of his career. He's now shown he can do this for 2 full seasons. So a belief he could do it for a third, I think, was overwhelming, or that he couldn't for some reason was overwhelming when it shouldn't be. I think credit to Gary Smith that he's tweaked things. He's moved around the midfield. He's moved Hani Mukhtar's positioning at times to allow him to come from a deeper position, which means he gets to do the thing he does best, which is run with the ball at pace and make people make decisions, because he's better at making decisions at high speed, and he's more skilled than you are at high speed as well. And so I think all of that is positive. And to show you can do it without Walker Zimmerman is like the big piece, which is the ceiling for them is that they are elite defensively. So the fear always was, well, if Walker goes out and the defense falls apart, they don't have the attack to carry it. But now you've shown you can do it with depth at center back, and you've shown you can do it without your star DP center back. So outside of Hani getting injured, there is not a ton of worry, I think, for Nashville. And they have the door open, which they have shown us by buying out Ake Loba, that they're going to try and make another move. But I think the pressure comes off that move now, because it's not like we need someone to come in and save us. It's, okay, what's working?
Doesn't the pressure stay, though, because it is about – we know what they are.
But you don't need a savior.
This is a solid playoff team with a high ceiling when Hani Mukhtar is scoring and in the open field. And if that is not the case, oftentimes it's not in the playoffs.
What do you mean?
Then they're not a team that is likely to win a championship or hasn't, right?
They got knocked out by Philly.
Yeah, sure. But isn't that the pressure to go win the championship? And like, if you have an open DP spot, like, and you have a window with the MVP of the league, why not show intent? I think that's what their fan base wants.
Intent is different than on July 3rd, we announced the signing, and on July 6th, we need you to score goals. Right? That's where I'm talking about with pressure, which is the signing will have time to settle, and whoever they sign, the need is not, we need you to do everything. Like, you don't need a Giakoumakis. Giakoumakis has to do more.
But imagine it would be great. Them with one.
It would be
like,
great.
I guess that's where I'm like, but like, shouldn't every team, every club, especially in a club in a position with a window like theirs, be like, we are trying to be the best club we can possibly be?
Yeah, it's also not a young team. It's not like a young emerging team that's going to be competing through like
Dax, Anibal Godoy, crucial pieces of the midfield.
That's kind of it. I'm just, before we get too far down, Joe Willis, but he's a goalkeeper.
Yeah, okay.
Joe Willis, Lovitz, you know, like these guys are in like Bunbury. These guys are not like young kids.
Yeah, but I wouldn't
even
say
Hani
is built
on. Not built on it, but
28.
Yeah, he's in his prime.
Yeah, I know. We can maximize it.
Yeah,
nobody is worried about Nashville. Like, what's the floor? Like, the floor is like, you know, it's a consistent playoff team. They've switched conferences. Like, you could throw them in either conference, whatever. Toss a hat. Like, they're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to be competitive.
Put them in the South.
Put them
in Ligia.
Yeah, which would be difficult. You know, they're going to be difficult to play against.
Put them in the SEC. They could still compete.
That I like. Yeah.
I mean, I think...
Be better than Vanderbilt. Yeah, right.
The system is set up to defend and be, you know, the best defense in the... Are you guys good?
Yes.
Every show, I try to be serious for a minute.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, you're right.
They've got the best defense in the league, like, statistically. So, you know, to be able to do that. But then the question mark has always been on the other side of what is, like, is that enough? And I've picked them to go to MLS Cup the past 2 years.
This feels like a personal problem. You got burned, and you're not ready to trust them again.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly my point.
You have
some
enough.
That's called learning.
But here's the thing.
And so that's what I'm saying.
But wouldn't that be a personal problem for Nashville, too? And
yeah. Like, they had to go into penalties against that match you mentioned in the playoffs against Philly, and they missed all five, or Andre Blake, you know, as well. So that was one. Then the next one, against the Galaxy, they showed no ambition. It was just defend, sit, and that does. It's, you can game plan in the playoffs, especially, and this year you want to go into three legs against this Nashville team that's just going to try to sit the whole time and survive. Like, you can game plan around that, and I think during the regular season it's working better because they don't want the ball, they don't demand the ball at all, and that's where they're at their most dangerous. And you continually get sucked into this. I mean, it is that much more impressive, and that's why I think Hani Mukhtar is the MVP to me. Is like, you know exactly where the danger is, and you still can't stop him. Like, he's still going to find those moments. He's still going to get out in space, and he's going to double step over you. He's going to do it anyways. But I think, yeah, they do need to add a number nine to go to, like, Gazdag. He's got Carranza and Ure. That makes him better. He has more pieces around him. And I'm not saying he's, you know, I think Hani Mukhtar is better for sure. I'm not. You roll traffic.
No, I'm rolling my eyes at Anders.
Okay.
You're good. I did not roll my eyes.
Okay,
at you.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're good. Anders wants me to not follow up. I'm like, dude, I'm in. Let's go.
Anders, and you're going to hate me. Charlie, we got you in a second. Charlie Bum will join us to do the CCL final. I'm putting 3 minutes on the clock. We got to do one touch takes on every other match from match day 15.
Oh, deal?
Deal. All right, let's go. Colorado Rapids 0, FC Cincinnati 1. Robin Frazier said afterwards, the fourth loss in a row for the Rapids. Quote, we're in a tough spot psychologically. Meanwhile, Cincinnati, big gap on top of the Supporters Shield standings. And Dom Bashi scores his first goal in MLS since he scored for Colorado in 2021.
And he hit him with the heart.
Seattle Sounders 1, Red Bulls 0. Kalen.
I was just more concerned about Jordan Morris, just with the injury goes off basically right after that, after the goal. And, you know, you saw the pattern where it came again, Leo Chu, Jordan Morris. You're like, all right, it's back clicking again. And then it's...
And Rui Diaz is going to be back soon, too. And he even rolled on. And
yeah, you start, it goes down a notch. So concerning there for Jordan.
Pass you the ball, Dave.
NYCFC, Philadelphia Union. NYCFC, you saw a little bit of the connection in their attacking third, but they are soft defensively. Thiago Martins got dominated multiple moments, and lack of understanding of just who Philly is. You play at Citi Field, like, they're going to go direct, they're going to go long, and it felt like last year with Philly, which is they crown the scores within 5 minutes. It's the second goal, and just the
two minutes, both in second and first half stoppage time. Crazy.
And the physical momentum of the way it happens is so intense.
Speaking of physicality, St. Louis City, big time font here, 3-1 over the Vancouver Whitecaps. Feel like we mostly summed this up. Vanni Sartini took some chances, and those chances didn't pay off, but City with, you know, when they get up and they get up at home, they tend to bludgeon you, and that's what they did. Congrats to Miggy Perez. 2 days after graduation, he scores his first MLS goal, the 18-year-old from just a couple miles outside the stadium. So that was tight. Houston Dynamo 2, Austin FC 1, Dave, Houston Dynamo atop Copa Tejas standing.
Is it Aliyu?
I believe so.
Okay. He started up top in this one, and it's not clean yet from him, but the runs he makes and the spaces he picks up make everyone else better. We saw Ache make the late run for the goal. We saw Corey Bird get into spots he wants to be in, Amin Bassi as well. It feels like the presence at center forward that Sebas Ferreira wasn't giving them what they were looking for, and then the hope would be the rest starts to come.
We've hit the 207 mark. We got a rush hit 3 minutes, if indeed that was the time I gave. New England 3, Chicago Fire 3, Kalen.
You already hit the Noel Buck stuff. He's still feeling it. Haile Selassie looked like he got the winner, and then the set piece, Josie gets one. Carlos Hill, injuries concerned. Brandon Bay missed this one. New England are getting a bunch of goals as of late, but I think that's mainly due to the injuries so far.
Sporting Kansas City, their players are coming back. They go down 1-0 at home to Portland on Sunday. 4-0. Starting to roll a little bit. So encouraging signs from Sporting. Meanwhile, Kalen, Montreal 1, Miami 0. You were there.
Yeah. Losada's got a couple new pieces. Bryce Duke came off at halftime. They're having to kind of manage his load because he's now going from not getting enough playing time or playing as a 6 or an 8 to now being relied upon to take set pieces, do everything throughout the match at the 10 spot. Lassiter is actually converted to a wing back. Which was a surprise, but he looks very good there. He looks comfortable. Came in, got the game-winning assist against.
Should have him on our position conversion podcast.
Yep.
Dave, we've got one more for you, Minnesota RSL.
Yeah, RSL, Demir Krylock back in, so they've been starting Rubio Rubin, quote, on the wing, which gives them three players, and him, Mufsovsky, and Dami, who are sort of forward options. And this is a team that almost led MLS in distance on shots. Now they have runners in the box, and now they can start to make a difference. But I worry about their central midfield.
Orlando City 1, Atlanta United 1 puts a cap on match day 15. Atlanta did not play well at all, but found a way to get the draw in this one. And that's the positive that they'll take away. And the Jekyll and Hyde of Orlando City continue. And that is match day 15 outside of San Jose 1, Dallas 1, which I forgot about. That's whack that the Quakes have dropped 10 points in second half stoppage time alone this year. That's just in second half stoppage time they've dropped 10 points.
They'd be Supporters Shield leaders without it.
Well, not leaders. They'd be behind Cincinnati, but they would be up to the top of the West.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so tough for them. All right, CONCACAF Champions League Wednesday night. I'm going to be watching along live on MLS 360. Should be a good time. That is literally my dream assignment. Charlie Bohm got an assignment for this one. MLSsoccer.com, Intrepid, you know him from all over the North American soccer universe. The content, it floweth from Charlie. And this is our first live guest on the show in our new Apple Studios, Charlie. I love your backdrop, man. What's up? Got to run that audio through the headphones.
Perfect moment for us.
Not your fault, Charlie.
You can't see as much of the blonde highlights from on camera just because of the way the lighting is.
All right, Charlie's coming back. In the meantime, I will give you a little bit more on the CCL. Club León is the opponent. Estadio León is the venue for this match. So we're starting out in Mexico. 10 p.m. Eastern is the start time of this. Of course, LAFC going to Mexico first, and they'll come back just a few days later on Sunday for the second leg of the final. I don't think we've ever seen it that close together.
No, it's never been weekend before, so it's always been midweek to midweek, so a full week. Reminder, LAFC went to León right before COVID, played at León, got run off the field, came home, ran León off the field, and went through. It was pretty much the final match before COVID shut everything down.
León has never won Champions League in any format, I don't believe.
They historically have been the team that lets Liga MX down against MLS teams because they have not been – they don't get drawn high. So they've drawn MLS teams in the first or second rounds before, and they have been the like, well – America and Tigres, they would never lose, but León, like not our fault.
Yeah, they're going for history as well. Let's try to make history once again. Charlie Bohm is back. Charlie, I think you and I can agree that Anders is to blame for this mess, but we love him anyway.
Oh, there's that laugh.
I know. Charlie, what's up, man?
All right, you got me?
We got you. Where's your head at now?
I'm so honored to be back on the show. It's only taken 10 years or so to get a second call back.
That's a little bit like, I know, it's my fault. It truly is my fault, and I'm taking the L here. That's a little bit like MLS. It's been 10 years since our first finalist. Does that work? No, we're talking about MLS for RSL with Charlie, and also the place that MLS occupies in this Champions League ecosystem. So tell us about the piece that you researched, reported, and wrote, Charlie, and how you're thinking about this.
As of an hour or something, or maybe half an hour ago, it's live on MLSsoccer.com. We had some fun with this one. We batted this one around among the editorial staff for a while. Amazingly, it's been 12 years since Real Salt Lake became the first MLS club to reach the finals of the modern iteration of the Champions League. And back then, as I'm sure you guys remember, and those of us who are a little longer in the tooth remember, the whole league rallied around RSL, almost in the way like, the whole country rallied behind the Apollo space program, right? This moonshot. And you had greetings of support from Commissioner Don Garber to rival coaches and players all the way on down. And it became a hashtag MLS4RSL. And so we thought it was fun to dig into the question of why there's no MLS4LAFC hashtag making the rounds these days.
Can we ask what we came away with, or do we have to go read the article?
Because I'm still rooting for any of
us. You would drop in with your take, Gus. No, I'm just kidding. It was fascinating. I got to talk to a bunch of different people in different spheres, from Max Bretos to Brian Dunseth to Garth Lagerwey, who was in the GM of that RSL team and then moved on to help the Sounders get over the mountaintop and win last year's CCL and is now at Atlanta United. And it was really intriguing to sort of explore this idea that the league has evolved. And one, it's a bigger league. In many cases, the sort of the deep allegiances between fans and their local teams or their preferred teams have made it feel kind of weird and awkward to invest any sort of emotional capital in a competing team or in the league, even if there's a collective benefit to be had when all MLS teams, when one wins a big achievement like CCL. So hope everybody goes and reads it. I went a little longer on this one than usual. For me, I think it's a sign of growth, and Lagerwey and others agreed that there's not a sense that LAFC needs the help. It's not quite as rare anymore. You know, this was very few and far between that an MLS team would get this far, and now it's four finals in 6 years.
Did anyone bring up Club World Cup and like Seattle's experience? Did anyone reach out to Seattle and tell them they were rooting for them? Because we didn't really get that vibe, I don't think.
Well, that was if you go back and I think we did a Twitter poll here with the hashtag. If you dig through the MLS4RSL hashtag, which was a real cosmic wormhole for me and these others, to go back and look at some of those tweets. The there was a comparison made, and Mari Sadu and others mentioned too that, you know, if you, even if you only care about what happens to your club in MLS, if an MLS team goes in and competes well at the Club World Cup, if you move from, okay, we've just now won the CCL for the first time ever, and now let's try and make noise on that bigger stage that provides for you, then, you know, that can lift all boats, so to speak. But I think last year's is a little more, I think there's probably a mix of ambivalence. You have the combination of whatever your opinion may be about the Seattle Sounders and their fan base and what they've done, versus, you know, what it would mean to the league to finally end this seemingly snake bit track record with CCL, right? And it really feels like even though it's just one, and you can easily write off one MLS, you know, victory in a huge string of Liga MX wins, the fact that the dam was broken, I think there's a lot less a sense of urgency in other sectors of MLS to finally do this and end the long period of suffering.
Charlie, those of us long in the tooth, you and I obviously are very much included in this at this point. I think I remember
mine longer than yours.
They're getting longer at the same pace, though, man. They're getting longer at the same pace. I remember the MLS for RSL movement as like this underdog story of a team that really nobody – at a club that really nobody thought could reach those heights and got there, and that's why it was so easy to sort of, you know, to sort of band together even though they might not be your cup of tea or you wanted your team to do it and hope for them to make success because they were the underdog. And we also had, obviously, the behind-the-scenes – shout out to Scotty Riddell video series that helped you connect with them emotionally. And over the years, it feels like slowly but surely – MLS, though not breaking down the door, as you said, but in winning it and starting to win in Mexico, has started to shed the underdog label, the perpetual underdog within this competition. Do you think we're past that at this point, or is there still that little bit of underdog that sticks around for any MLS team here?
Well, I mean, I personally am still having a hard time wrapping my head around the idea that LAFC are favored. Some would say, and some of the odds makers say, they're heavily favored in this series. To me, there's still too much karmic danger there, right? Because, you know, you may have won one and broken through, but that still doesn't necessarily mean that the balance of power has shifted in under a year. But certainly I think a big market team that's from its birth has aspired to do this sort of thing, has pulled off deals and built a team that is above and beyond everyone else at the moment, at least if we look at a number of different metrics. Whereas RSL and to a similar extent Montreal in 2015, were, you could argue that they're underdogs even within MLS, with when you look at market size and ownership wealth and a number of other factors there. So yeah, I think and the personalities too. Dunny was had some great insight about, you know, that Jason Christ team that was the team as the star that was playing pretty soccer without spending a ton of money. You know, the DP era had begun, but they didn't have any, really. I mean, I think Alvaro Sobria was their first designated player. And so they were upsetting the balance of power even back in the early 2010s by, you know, being ahead of or even level with the Galaxy and the Sounders and the like. So so I think it's for sure there's the individual identity of the team and the organization that's reached that point matters. And right now, even though it's, you know, we could say that we should judge at the end of the season, LAFC is at a level that you may not like it, but you have to respect it.
I'm going to read you this quote because you said cosmic danger, and this one red flag cosmic danger for me. Timothy Tillman in the lead up to this match, quote, "I think Mexican teams don't really play that tactically. It's more or less emotional, very much 1v1s, all about fighting, all about emotions. Of course, they've got quality up front, but if we play well, I'm sure we can win over there." And alarm bells went off for me because my memory, my fear, my institutional terror is that MLS teams over the years have always been the tactically naive and the mismanagers of game states. And I was like, dude, don't say it out loud. What did you make of a quote like that in the lead up? And what do you think of this matchup overall?
I have no doubt that plenty of people around BMO Stadium winced and are probably still are at what he said. And to some extent, it's not entirely fair, you know, to ask him that question because he's a new arrival here and hasn't experienced and may 100%. Not even have the full awareness secondhand of the full context of the border rivalry and the history there. So I think it's a little tough on him. It's not ideal, I'm sure, from Steve Cherundolo's point of view, to have anything that could be used as bulletin board material. And I think that's another thread of this conversation is I wonder if he would be saying something like that if they were playing Tigres or America or one of the Gigantes, who are more traditionally seen as having that, still having that sort of sense of awe that even a good MLS team knows they're in for a fight. You think back to the 2020 CCL final down in the bubble in Orlando when LAFC reached it. You know, they beat America on the way, but then they have to go up against the star power and the know-how of an extremely talented and battle-tested Tigres side, and came up short at the very end, right? In those small margins, I think you see where experience matters, pedigree matters a lot in those situations. So I would have to say that that's probably not a great thing that LAFC have to even broach this topic, but who knows? You know, it's first leg will tell us something, although not everything, as history shows.
So what's sort of your feeling if LAFC does this? We've kind of had this combo. Seattle did it last year. They don't make the playoffs. Like, if LAFC wins this, where does this team sit? What's sort of the legacy? How what will this moment be in a week if LAFC gets this done?
Well, I think there's going to be some interesting discourse, whatever happens. For one, I've already noticed a little bit and dabbled in it myself a little bit on Twitter, talking about the concept of the treble. Now, for most people, technically speaking, you can only win a treble within one given season. But we'll be talking about an LAFC team that won a double, 6 months ago, and now they've added, you know, the only possible way that you can add on or that you can surmount a Shield Cup double, and they will have done that in a matter of months. But I think the true evaluation has to happen at season's end, because there's been a CCL hangover, a vicious one, really, the deeper you go in the tournament up until this year. It's already has shown itself in those past cases, right? You look at Seattle, they were already a little bit behind the eight ball at this point in last season's campaign, but they had a bunch of games in hand and felt like they had time to pull it out. Ultimately, they couldn't, you know, they couldn't deal with the hangover. At the moment, LAFC is, I think they're top if you look at points per game in the West. We have no, you know, right now it seems as though they're managing the multifold challenges of competing on international and domestic fronts. But Tarantola himself and John Thorington said at the start of the season that they didn't feel they had as much depth as last year. They didn't know how they were going to be able to go for everything. They already had to make compromises with Open Cup. And, you know, will there be a hangover? We won't know that for weeks and months to come. And I think that's the big question. And Jeremiah O'Shan, one of the people I spoke to for the piece up at Sounder at Heart, he acknowledged that if LAFC can go on and win something else, even one other trophy this year, in addition to CCL, that is a step forward from what the Sounders did.
Prediction, Charlie. Care to throw a jinx out there or going to stay away?
Are you crazy, man? Come on.
I guess that's up to
no,
us.
I mean,
Charlie's lost Interliga and Superliga. He knows how this goes. He's not going to get
Don't put that on me. Don't put that on me.
Well, no, I did enjoy looking back at some of the results of the past and being reminded that both RSL and Montreal, despite being heavily, going up against heavily favored opposition in CCL final, got that away result that they wanted. You know, yeah. They got goal draws in Mexico and seemed to have it all in their hands, and then had kind of, it was a little bit of a face plant for RSL, and Montreal just got outgunned by the talent of America back in 2015. And same with, you know, if you look at LAFC's last time at this stage, right? They didn't get to 90 minutes. They were better than Tigres for 75 minutes or so, but couldn't seal the deal. So I'm very leery of putting too much weight on what we see tomorrow. But that said, you know, there are a lot of these sort of ties in previous rounds and previous editions of CCL where the Mexican team can put it out of reach if they can ambush you in that first leg. With, you know, all the different concerns, the different challenges of playing in Mexico, the traditional or the all-time history, the record of MLS teams on Mexican soil is quite poor, even after last year. So it will be fun to watch, but I don't expect it to be one-sided in either direction. I think these are two really smart, well-crafted teams that know what's required in the situation and will not let a game get out of hand.
Beware of free space, as always. Go to MLSsoccer.com, Charlie Bohm, digging deep into the history of this competition and the way people feel some kind of way about a team other than theirs winning it. MLS for, I don't know, maybe not LAFC, but for Charlie Bohm. Charlie, thank you, man, for being the inaugural journey for us on this remote guest situation. And thanks to Anders for making it work.
What an honor, guys. What an honor. Have a great show.
All right. We want to dig in here. I guess we have to give our predictions / thoughts. Big thanks to Charlie. You can find him everywhere. One of the best sources of interesting information, good reporting, and nuanced commentary in Major League Soccer and North American Soccer. What did you guys think of the Tillman quote? In some ways, I'm super excited about it, not just from a content perspective, because he doesn't have the baggage that we have. He doesn't feel the, like, woe is us, this is probably going to end badly.
Yeah.
But that sometimes when you make quotes like that, it ends badly.
Yeah.
Very possible that it could end badly.
Yes. That quote is almost like the definition of baggage. I think that's it's a bad decision to come out and give anything like that, and just wrong. So I don't think that's going to help them much, but I still like this LAFC team. Especially when I think about the managing of the home away, like, I know it's different in a sense because you're going to Mexico, which is more difficult, but I've seen them down in Mexico. Yes, it was in like a COVID it was actually in Orlando. So I take that back, but against Mexico.
No, but they went to Leon.
They did.
Okay. But they lost 2-0.
Okay. But I liked, when I saw them in this run, they give up the goal to Gazdag in against Philly, and then they come back at the end. And that's where I thought they won that last series, was in that first leg, was at away on the away to be able to come back late, get an important goal, how to manage those situations. Even when you think about MLS Cup last year, the way they took blows from Philly and came back and found a way. So I think this team, has the flexibility to play at home, and we've seen them be open at times, but also can play that more like defensive, solid, safe, hit on the counterattack. They have the weapons to do it. So I really like this LAFC team. I understand why they're favored. And yeah, to go back to your point, though, a little bit of I don't think these guys were around and following 2011.
No, they weren't MLS for RSL.
Like, they would listen to this podcast and be like, what are these guys worried about?
They spend Tuesdays and Wednesday nights for eons just like dreading the inevitable.
But then the flip side is, in the quote, classic Insigne quote, which is when Tillman comes back in 2 days and is like, that was really difficult. Like altitude, it was really loud and intimidating, and I couldn't really breathe, and they just kept bringing quality off the bench, and it's like, yeah, that's the history, but it's for a reason. It's not just like a fake voodoo that we've all created. It's the reality, which is a lot of these Liga MX clubs have deeper rosters. They have sometimes better home field advantages. It is more of an advantage than, I don't know how many Leon fans will be at LAFC. I wouldn't be surprised if LAFC is pretty overwhelmingly positive, but like, historically, MLS teams have hosted CCL games where there has been a large away presence, so it takes away their home advantage versus then the travel. So a lot of this, one of the things I will say, and I think your points about those Philly games are interesting, because for LAFC, I think one of the thought processes is like, they play pretty, they play beautiful. Is that hard? Is that tough? Like, can you deal with tough moments when the game's against you, when it's physical? I think of this central midfield and like, Ilya Sanchez has been unbelievable. He is not an intimidating force who's sort of going to slow the game down
but dominate
that area.
Kellen can be. He understands the rhythms and flows of this region and these competitions.
Sure.
I think Sifu has that in his bank a little bit. Timothy Tillman's not like a shrinking violet or anything like that. He may be more, in my mind, he trends more towards skillfulness, but he also just runs and runs and runs and covers a ton of ground. The thing that Mexican teams have always had is a mental advantage. And like an emotional advantage and a understanding the moment and game states and when to be like, we've got you, we're going to pounce on you, and we're going to beat you into submission until you have no chance in this anymore. This LAFC team, I think, is pretty well set up for this competition. It's not a team that always wants to play or has to play pretty. They're happy to give another team the ball and just kill you on the counterattack. I look at Leon, and I'm not going to raise my hand and say that I have watched this team week to week or anything like that. Just reading about them, digging into some stats, et cetera, et cetera, highlights, things of that nature. They have a new manager, a young manager, Argentine, Nicolas Larcamón, and they have given up, I think the fewest goals in Liga MX in the Clausura was Leon, 13 goals. They don't score a ton of goals, but they seem very organized in the sense that they're not going to give you a ton of opportunities. That, as Anders just whispered in my ears, you might say tactical in that situation. Angel Mena has been a a monster for like 4 years in Liga MX. This is probably his he's not as productive this year as he has been.
35 now.
Yeah, he's on the.
I think he went to the World
Cup. But that's never stopped anybody in Liga MX from just doing in MLS teams. Joel Campbell is a historic thorn in our side for the American national team as well as in CCL. I'm still nervous. I'm still anxious.
Elias Hernandez has been around for a while. He's a match winner as well. No, this very much feels like a León team that can absorb blows if they need to and then have someone with a moment of brilliance who can break open. It sounds similar to LAFC. I think it probably will play out that way. The question becomes, with the home crowd behind you, how much of the game early on does León take? I worry about LAFC's center backs.
I don't think Chiellini is available for
them. Aaron Long hasn't looked like himself at his peak at LAFC. And I don't know if that's comfort with his partners or not. I think Murillo's had really good moments. I don't think he's a backline leader. And I think this game is above what Maldonado, at least right now, is capable of, but probably overall. Then you add on to that you don't have Maxime Crepo. And John McCarthy's been good in moments. I assume it's John McCarthy starting here. I don't think losing to the Galaxy in Open Cup.
That is a question mark, too.
And that's where I worry about this team.
I do want to take a little bit of an issue over the idea that, MLS teams didn't have tactics in the past. This RSL team is, a perfect example of that, number one. And even the, know-how or whatever it is, that experience. Sure, I definitely can understand, I've gone down and played in Central America, North America, Mexico, it's difficult and you have to learn. You have to learn how to manage that. But the big difference, if I'm just being honest, is money.
Yeah.
That's the big difference between those matches against the Mexico teams and the Mexican teams and the MLS teams over time. And that goes to the issue of depth, because that's where you start to get tested and that's where these teams fall off a cliff, when you see the way that by the end of last season, Christian Roldan was injured. They had just had been through a lot.
And this
put
season
in
right
lot.
Now, Christian Roldan is injured for
exactly.
the time that you've
seen it. So I think, the difference for me is actually, one, that's beginning to get better. And then two...
Stipe Buick.
Yeah. Two, Bogus the way maybe, that but... Thorington has built this depth on this team. They're bringing Cifuentes, off the bench at times. Mm-hmm. They're bringing in players that... can really make a difference. They have Chiellini. They brought in Gareth Bale late in the match to win MLS Cup. They have some of that's from, living in LA and using those, whatever mechanism you have, even if it's beautiful weather and palm trees, whatever it is. And I think that that's one of the big shifts between why MLS is more competitive or not. And structurally, yeah, sure. I think players are getting smarter, understanding, but to be able to bring in Timothy Tillman, scouting him, getting him over there, let's still have to do some PR media training, but he made a mistake, but that doesn't help. But I think,
but that's okay. Back it up. Tim.
But overall,
back it up.
Overall, I think the big difference is, this team has a ton of depth, and that's why late in matches, late in games, they keep finding themselves on the right side.
And quality too. And quality. Yeah. And that's,
And they're hard
money
to prepare for because you don't know what what group you're going to get, and you don't know how they're going to.
And MLS gave them some good scheduling
so
breaks.
They
on
both
the...
have had a really big layoff because León.
Yeah,
didn't
well,
even
León.
Get
yeah,
the
San Luis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting as well. Which is where does layoff turn into rust, and who sort of starts quicker, and who needs to start quicker?
Prediction for me, and then we'll hit the mailbag maybe.
Overall, or just the first leg?
Give me both.
I think León wins 2-1 at home. I think LAFC wins the series.
Okay.
I don't know, man. No idea. But I do think there is something about I'm interested to read this article now because the idea of I almost wanted to ask is it progress for MLS clubs or supporters to root against LAFC? Is that the next step? Are you rooting against them? I'm not. I'm rooting for LAFC because. I don't know. I like Thornton's old teammate. I want to see MLS teams. I do feel more connected.
I mean, we were on the field last year, champagne bottle and all, for the final moments. And, I mean, that was...
Well, you were. I wasn't there, but...
But you were standing next to
me. No, I wasn't. That was Charlie Davis.
Wait.
I was not there. I was on my couch being why am I not at this game right now?
For the CCL final?
CCL we were. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were talking about MLS.
I've seen that meme a million times.
Regrettably.
I thought Kalen was trying to erase himself.
Oh, my God.
I almost got Kalen is locked in.
Serious gaslighting right there.
Wow. Okay.
Whoa.
But I thought you were like, I don't want to be associated to that moment anymore, so I'm just going to say it wasn't me.
I mean, yeah, that's
I hope we have another moment like that. You know what? I'm always going to trend positive in this competition, and it's broken my heart a million times. And if it does it again, all well and good. But LAFC to the rafters, baby.
So to Caitlin's point of like, MLS teams have always been able to be at a level and belief in what has changed. It does feel – I actually still think TFC's run – I think a lot of MLS teams walked away from that and they're like, we're here, we can do this. And that's when I felt internally in MLS, people say, I'm not rooting for that team. Like front office people, players, scouts, where I talk to them.
Because Montreal was still like the plucky underdogs.
Yeah.
Could.
Like RSL, where it was like, Porter, can we, Club America, can we?
Yeah. If RSL or Montreal go to the CCL final again, like next year, say Montreal wins the Canadian championship, they make a run in CCL, everyone's going to be on board, I think, for RSL and Montreal again. I don't think people will be rooting against them. I think part of it is it's easier to maybe root against LAFC because they beat your club already. Or
it's all easier talks about, and like they get all the
exactly.
They get the spotlight while we get relegated to the back burner here.
Well, everyone got 12 seconds on
That's
this
true.
One.
By the way, League's Cup, I think, will also change this dynamic.
Yeah, 100%.
Because you'll now have every team every year, and there's just like a
and you'll know the opponent better. Like they'll know the opponent better,
which will make it fun, to like create a little rivalry.
Absolutely,
because we have a little bit of that in the past of like Piojo saying Atlanta wasn't that good, and like what happened to TFC and their run and their experience at Chivas. Like, but we never see those teams play against each other again. So now every year, as you have them, you'll come out of Leagues Cup into the next CCL and be like, oh, wow, Nashville's playing against Toluca again?
Right.
Like, that game was wild.
It works the other way, too, right? They're going to, like, Lyon fans and Pumas fans know.
Hani Mukhtar could become the boogeyman, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, God, not Hani. Like, he kills us. So, well, here we go. Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, Lyon, LAFC.
We talked about that Veljko Panovic, powered by Ronaldo Cisneros, almost won the Ligia.
No, but that's awesome.
It's MLS to a T.
Take our scraps.
Yeah, exactly.
Sunday is the second leg, LAFC Lyon. Should be awesome. You know we love this competition. We'll have a little watch-along while it's going on in MLS 360 as well. So look forward to seeing you there. And check it MLS 360 as well as the full slate of games for Match Day 16 on Wednesday night. We all have been here all day recording previews for every single game. So instead of telling you what you should watch or what's important, just go to MLS Season Pass. Watch all those previews. They're 3.5 minutes each. You can power through them quickly, either just your team or others. I do have to get to the mailbag here, making some choices. My first choice is that Peoria City Soccer literally just tweeted us and said, Carp, you say Peoria City won 3-0 last weekend over FC Wichita.
Wow.
Knocked off my boys.
Wow.
Host Chicago City FC this Saturday. They had a social event tomorrow at one of their restaurant bar partners, and they're going to unveil their Peoria City Pilsner at the Bearded Owl Brewing. We're going full Carp. So this is
Did we get a word back on the Carp tacos?
No, we didn't, or the Carp merchandise, but we'll put in a good word on the merch and see if we can we can support our beloved Carps here. And then I have Richard, who's on Pacific FC, and we'll end it here because geography
feels like
is our big thing.
Nick.
I did. You want that one?
Seems like you want that
one. Nick, I've got a question on St. Louis City SC. Last week, Matt said that the city crowd against Sporting Kansas City was the best in the world that weekend. You may have seen that St. Louis City FC tweeted that video out with footage, which was very nice of them. We're thankful. As everyone knows, the Cardinals fans are called the, quote, best fans in baseball due to their continued support, baseball knowledge, and respect for the game. Given the continually impressive atmosphere at City Park and the history and soccer knowledge of St. Louisians, how long until we can dub them the, quote, best fans in soccer?
So I want to say I went to the greatest spectacle in racing this weekend at the Indy 500. Shout out to all my people in Indy for holding it down. And as people were leaving, some guy was wearing a St. Louis City hat, and I was like, he's sitting in a car. And I was like, hey, man, do you go to the games? He goes, I've been to three. They're the best atmosphere ever. Best thing you'll ever do. I was like, oh, no way.
Most
see, like,
St. Louis
people don't
thing
stay
of
down.
All time.
Sit down. He's like, yeah, man, you got to go. Have you been? I was like, no. He's like, you got to go. So there you go. St. Louis, spectacle in racing.
I read this only to turn the rest of MLS on St. Louis City because let's be straight up. Nobody likes the Cardinals' best fan in baseball bit, self-proclaimed. So I would not do that if I was you, St. Louis. But if you want to stir that pot, go for it. And I put this on Matt Doyle for bringing this on us all. All right. Last one here, Richard. He says, Langford, where the home field of Pacific FC is located, is a suburb of Victoria, the capital of the province of British Columbia. As you know, it's on Vancouver Island, hence Pacific social media, among others, calling this game the second installment of the Ferryside Derby. But it is no more a Langford team than Dallas is a Frisco team, or Chicago, just a relocated Bridgeview team. Greater Victoria's population is probably around 500,000, so their outermost suburbs are not that distant from the city proper. The new quote-unquote Vancouver team and CPL play in the suburb of Langley, which is a longer drive from central Vancouver than Langford is from Victoria. The Galaxy remain a Carson team, however. I didn't remember
I think Callum Irving moved from Pacific to the new Vancouver team. And, like, the whole commentary was, oh, he has to commute more just to get to his team than he did when he played for Pacific. Shout out Kelly Irving. I feel like I got a decent amount of this right on initial.
Oh, wow.
Even as Doyle threw energy and spewed chaos at me.
Yeah.
So this has taken me a really long time to figure out. So I'm proud of myself.
Okay. We'll save the Cameron T. email about names for the rivalry between Sporting Kansas City and Missouri, St. Louis, the best fans in soccer, for a later date. And we end with this. If you find Kalen Carr's keys, please let him know on Twitter or otherwise. Big thanks to Charlie Bone for making history with us. Enjoy the midweek action. The guys will be back on Thursday. It will be Tommy Scoops, David Goss, and Sasha Kleshchen.
I will not be here.
Oh.
I will be at the soccer tournament.
Sasha. Oh, yeah. You're TSD.
So if you guys want to watch Kalen a little soccer.
And Tom Bogert.
And if you're sitting around saying, I wish I was watching a 7v7 high-stakes soccer tournament, all of Thursday and Friday, you can find me on YouTube calling those games of a bunch of legends.
Should be love tight.
It, love it.
Three
Mike
legends.
Mike McGee's team is who I'm pulling for.
Sneaky Foxes, right?
Sneaky Fox.
The squad. It is
our
team.
Adios. We'll see you later.